Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Big Island of Hawaii. A missionary.
A coffee missionary, spreading the word. That's right. My name is Dave Bateman. Trudy and I own Heavenly Hawaiian Farms in Hualalola, Hawaii.
Here we are on the top of the world.
On top of the world.
I now know why you call it heavenly.
Hualalai Volcano, just south of Kona, up Mauka, as we say, which means up the mountainside. Elevation here runs between 1,200 at the bottom of the farm on the Mamalohoa Highway, all the way up to 1,600 feet where we're sitting right now. And then the farm continues up Mauka, up the mountain, to about the 1,800-foot elevation. And so the entire farm is about a half a mile long, running from Makai, Oceanside, to Mauka, Mountainside. I'd say about 1,000 feet on average in width.
As you alluded to yesterday, just because somebody is a grower within the Kona growing region doesn't make it great coffee.
That's exactly right. First of all, the law requires Kona coffee to be grown in Kona. And I explained to you the boomerang-shaped district. It has to be grown here. It can't be grown north in Hamakua, can't be grown south in the Kau district, which is the south end of this, or in the Puna district over on the southeast side. It has to be grown in Kona. Number two, you are correct. There are many Kona coffees that are not fully developed with their oils and sugars because they're at a lower elevation, drier, not enough rain. The beans just haven't fully developed. And those can be bitter. If you don't develop the oil and sugar to overcome the natural acidity, you're going to end up with a bitter bean. So yes, you can have...
So that grower can label his coffee Kona coffee, correct?
And the market will determine whether or not it's marketable. But yes, he's legal, but the question is, can he market it? And so that's why it's very important for anybody seeking out the best of the best in Kona. You got to come and visit the farms or order coffee from all the farms. Just get a little sample and try them all until you find the one that hits your sweet spot.
So there's no hierarchical certification, grading system, point system that somebody on the mainland, if they went to a store to buy Kona coffee, how would they know?
By looking at the bag. And the problem is on the mainland, and we do have the Kona coffee, and it has a problem with this, comments I'm about to make. There is no regulation about Kona, designating a bag of coffee Kona on the mainland. Here, it's very strict. Has to be grown in Kona, and you have to make certain grade requirements. The lowest grade to be called Kona is called prime. You can have up to 20% defects, and that could be a bug hole, fungus, a chip bean, a moldy bean, mother bean, you know, and other defects, but you can only have 20% by weight. 100-pound bag of green cannot have any more than 20 pounds of green with one or two of those types of defects. Doesn't apply to the mainland.
Let's go mainland for a moment.
Okay.
So I'm in San Francisco and I go to Safeway. If I picked out a Kona coffee, it might not be grown in Kona district?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So it could be from Kauai, it could be from Oahu?
Could be from Costa Rica, Guatemala, Brazil. That's correct.
That's a tough battle for you guys.
It is, and we're constantly fighting it.
What is your best hope to get that awareness ramped up for the consumer worldwide?
Again, it's a buyer beware situation.
That's a tough one.
It is, but what I would recommend, first of all, is you go to the website. If you see a coffee that's XYZ Kona Coffee Farm, go check it out. Most of the legitimate coffee sellers, the farmers and the producers on this island in Kona, will have a legitimate website. That's the first thing I would do. Number two, if you find what you appears to be a legitimate farmer, then you have to ask yourself, okay, self, is it possible that this farm is buying coffee from another origin? Here's the problem we have. Currently, we produce about 3 million pounds of green bean, the finished coffee product just before roasting. That's what goes into the roaster, okay? We only produce about 3 million on 4,000 acres, 800, 900 farms, nobody knows for sure. Okay, so that's the limit of your supply. But research has shown that not we, they are selling upwards of 20 to 30 million pounds of what they call Kona. And it's interesting. Finally, their time to roost has come, and they're being called out.
Who is they?
Four farmers got together and have filed litigation, a lawsuit in Seattle against multiple farms that they have good scientific reason to believe are masquerading other coffees from around the world as Kona. And they also went after Costco and Walmart and some of the distributors under a federal act. So the way they have scientifically proven this, and they won't disclose who their science lead witness is and the scientific methods they have, and we're very familiar with those in the Kona industry, and that's called tracing origin by chemical composition. And what they do is they look for certain elements, certain rare elements and certain natural elements that occur in each of the soils. So, for instance, Kona is going to have a certain agglomeration. So when you go ping it, it's going to give you a cluster of dots on these graphic charts and say, okay, you're in the lower left-hand corner because of these chemicals and the soil types and that kind of thing, and that analyzed through chemical analysis. Costa Rica is going to be way off the chart in the upper right-hand corner in this hypothetical chart I'm talking about. And so they can actually trace the chemical composition of the growing environment, even in the green for sure, but even all the way through roasting. And this is a brand new science. I sit on the board of the Hawaii Coffee Association. We ourselves are very interested in this to protect the Kona coffee farmers and the Kau coffee farmers and the Maui coffee farmers, Molokai and Oahu. So chemical analysis is the key to proving fraudulent Kona on the mainland.
Listening in from the outside, this is inside industry aggravation and frustrations.
Yeah.
Me, again, as a consumer at a San Francisco Safeway, what I would love is some sort of sticker or some sort of certification on the bag of coffee that I would know, oh my God, this is definitely certified true Kona. Is there talk of doing that?
Well, the problem is we do have certified 100%. The Kona Coffee Council has little 100% Kona stickers, and some of the other coffee associations do that too. But it's pretty easy to bootleg a roll of these things, you know. I can't prove it, but we think that has gone too. So really what it comes down to is the industry disciplining itself. And that's why we're going to contract with these consultants who can actually analyze the origin scientifically to be able to prove by a preponderance of the evidence in a federal or state courtroom that this is not. So that's really the best thing. But stickers themselves don't answer the question.
As a consumer, again, what you're advocating is seeking and proving provenance myself by going to the websites and see where their coffee is grown.
It is the easiest, simplest, cheapest way to protect yourself. Just check them out and make sure that they're legitimate. And if you want to take it, you know, a little step further, you can also do some research to see if they've been involved in litigation or how the Better Business Bureau. But yes, do your homework on the website. Very simple. That's the simplest way to do it. But just know that the coffee industry is now taking major steps to protect consumers here on the islands as well as on the mainland from these fraudulent masqueraders of false Kona coffee.
Let's shift to growing practices and some of the best practices that work for you and the deal breaker of trying to be truly organic.
Wow, that's a loaded question.
I know.
Oh my goodness, that is a tough one. There are two schools of thought. You know, organic is kind of the key word, the quintessential coffee is organic. And that's cool. If you have a good organic farmer that adequately fertilizes the coffee to enhance the flavor, the body, and all those good things that give you just that wonderful cup of Kona coffee. But the problem is getting enough fertilizer up the tree through the roots and up through the stem and out the branches to the fruit is tough. NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Nitrogen for the leaves, phosphorus for the root ball, and potassium and other micronutrients, iron, strontium, sulfur, whatever, for the fruit itself. And finding that in a natural environment is tough. And so I'm biased. I'm a conventional farmer. But we're kind of moving to organic standards. You know, like we're not using Roundup anymore on the farm. We use other methods of taking care of the weeds to make sure the tree gets all of the fertilizers. But we use conventional fertilizers, making sure that four times a year these trees get fed and during critical periods of their growth and the growth of the fruit so that they are adequately fed and the beans can max, the red cherry can maximize all of the nutrients necessary to create their 800 organic compounds that lead to a wonderful cup of Kona coffee when it's roasted. I have a bias against the organic because I don't see how you could survive in this tough labor. It's costly, the material costly, environment, and we have a weather downturn. So as a farmer, you got all these weather risks, etc. My point is, as a farmer that's trying to make a little bit of a profit, we don't get rich doing this, and how to make a small profit in the coffee industry, you start out with a huge, huge profit, and you're going to lose some. But we're doing okay. We've been blessed with some wonderful tours. We're able to kind of stay ahead of it, but I'll tell you, this is a very risky business, and being a conventional farmer, I think, gives us the added financial ability, sustainability, as opposed to being an organic farmer. I just don't see how an organic farmer can really survive in this tough environment, the cost environment. The big bug to hit us was the CBB. Coffee berry borer hit us in 2010, and it's a little bug, and the whole world's got it, and now guess what? Kona has it. The other islands, trying to protect them from getting it, but Kona got hit with it really hard.
A missionary.
A coffee missionary is spreading the word. That's right. My name is Dave Bateman. Trudy and I own Heavenly Hawaiian Farms in Hualalua, Hawaii.
We'll see you here. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Big Island of Hawaii.
This program came from Hawaii.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.